station from around the nation. It's the 411. We're sharing a cake. What a way to make your day. Sharing K is on the way. It's the 411. We're sharing K. It's about newsmakers, movers and shakers. Inspiration from around the nation.
This is Troy Holbert, pastor of the St. Luke Baptist Church, and Sunday morning is not Sunday morning without the Lord and an opportunity to listen to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Well, the church said amen. That's what they said. I'm going to go by in a couple of weeks and visit his church.
Oh, yeah?
Because it's close, right?
Yeah, right around the corner.
Yeah. You know, I got all these invitations.
That's right.
Me and my spiritual mom, we roll. I say, you ready to go? She said, I'm ready to go. That's my church road partner. You know, we coming in Jesus' name. It's all up in there. And one of these days, I'm going to roll out to your church, too.
Okay.
And do a pop in. Yeah. A couple of times I came to the church, they forgot my name, but they said, aren't you? Yeah, I'm her. Yeah.
Not the other lady.
Yeah, I'm the. Anyway, let me say hello to Nashville, all of our absolutely wonderful people. And, you know, I tell you all the time, and I mean it, I'm just delighted to be in the number one more time, as we say, in our vernacular. We have it was kind of warm there yesterday. You know, it started out nice and breezy, nice and fall-like, and then it really did warm up quite a bit, and it's going to look similar to that today, but at least the rain stopped. Let us dry out for a few days, but unfortunately, we're going to be back in the soup bowl again for a couple of days in the rainbow. But I think maybe the Titans can get through their game today and not have to worry about, you know, ducking and dodging umbrellas and all that. So, because they'll be gets lining up for tailgating here shortly, right?
That's correct.
Because what is it, a 12 or 2 or 3 o'clock game, or was it 12?
You know, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Google it, but yeah. It's a big game for them.
Yeah, well, they're probably getting them grills going.
They're facing the champs.
Oh, are they?
Philly.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be packed out there.
It's going to be, yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, we'll see how that goes. Anyway, it wouldn't be nice to have a good year, though, a good, you know, the fans deserve it, you know, to have a winning season.
They're off to a decent start.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it stays that way, because, you know, fans will turn on you. They talk about you like a dog. I used to like you.
If you're not winning.
Right. They don't like you.
Well, here in Nashville. Right.
They don't like you. Yeah. And they like, you know, talk about you, but no. Fair weather fans. Anyway, this morning, news headlines, issues of the day. Talk about a few things, and we'll take things as they come this morning, and got a couple of church announcements here to slide in. And at 8 o'clock, I'm bringing back a prior guest, Fred Shireen. I really did enjoy him so much. He has been teaching Bible study for more than 40 years, and he's like a biblical traveling Bible study man, and does a lot of speaking, etc. And he has a series called Dynamic Studies, and the one that he was on last time is Dynamic Studies in Philippians. So we only got through to a little bit of it. And we spend these times on these particular type of books to give you more of a drill down instead of a drizzle. You know, we drill down a little bit deeper into, because, you know, the scripture, you got to pay attention to it. You know, you just can't remember the top 10 and glossy, you know, that's your life book.
Yeah.
So you gotta spend some time. And you gotta understand it, you know. If you don't understand things, and you don't get the cultural things and all that other, you won't get it. You'll be out here doing dumb stuff.
That's true.
Well, you're like, well, that's what it says. No, that's really not what it says. You know, so a lot of people use scripture to justify insanity. And people know that that's real. Not just recently, but throughout time. So, anyway, that's what's up today. We got our, this time next week and this weekend coming.
Radio
we have
on.
Our
mm-hmm.
big affair, and we're excited as always. We get to see all the wonderful people come, and oh, it's beautiful. And, you know, everybody's like, it's just a good vibe. You know what I'm saying? It's all about the station. And once you realize that what we do is important. It is. And not because I'm here, but because it is. You know, how rare it is to have an African American public radio station in your city. I mean, that's as rare as a winning Powerball ticket tonight. Coming out of somebody's neighborhood. I mean, this over here. It's just rare. So, you know, the city's getting a blessing, and our global audience is, and they appreciate it. Because some other stations aren't devoted to, you know, there's college radio, and then there's, you know, this is not the children running the house and all that. This, you know, we grown. And we talk about grown folks' things. So we're more community-based than we are. We're owned and operated by college. But the point is that we hit issues and cover territory and can stretch out with some of this stuff, like in a way that maybe others don't. Some focuses are different. Some of the HBCU radio stations are hip-hop. And there's no sense in reinventing the big wheel downtown because, you know, we can't compete against that. And that's not our world. Our world is doing the jazz as we have done. And we are 45 years into, you know, nobody else was playing jazz 45 years ago on the radio.
Wow.
No, that's real. They was heavy into R&B and country and probably some gospel. But, I mean, you know, this was the cool house. So, and it shall continue to be. I think we blazed a good path there. You know, God is good. The Lord knows what he's doing. So, you know, and I respect that. I'm grateful for the opportunity to get to do what I do. So this fundraiser is important to the process. We have a big project that we're going to undertake in our production studios. A lot of our students, we teach them various things in there. We're not professors. We don't profess to be, you know, but we, you know, I've got 40 years of broadcast experience. If that's not worth anything, somebody need to tell all these veterans out here. They won't believe it. Actually got, 20-some years?
About 21.
21 years.
I think this year is 21.
Okay, yeah. 21. I got 40. So that's 61 years of experience. At all areas, all facets of broadcasting. So we do, you know. But anyway, a lot of them want to learn a great deal about audio and, you know, production and things of that nature. So our big project that we're going to start working on is doing some things in the production room, getting our furniture made like we have here in real live studio furniture. Okay. WFSK never had its own real live till we started fundraising. It didn't come from Vanderbilt basement. It didn't come from June Bugs and them's garage. Okay. Y'all don't hear me. See, you don't hear me. I got pictures. Okay. This was real custom made in here because we deserve it. Our community deserves it. So we're going to have the same company, the Graham Studio Furniture Company, is going to do matching so we can be looking like we're supposed to.
All right.
up, down. Because that's how I roll. We want a real life experience for them. Instead of saying, well, everything black broke. Okay, that's and you know they will. Won't they say it? Won't right. they? That's how come right. we yeah. black? How come over there is nice? No, it's nice here too. See, gotta set that mind in the right direction. Why is everything in the black community dirty? It's clean over there. So I want to go. Have we heard that since we've been here?
All the time.
Okay. I'm just saying, y'all, this stuff, we ain't making this up. This is real. The children come in from all over the place, and you hear all kinds of things. But that's the big project for 18 and 19. So we are going to start immediately working on that. I already have the idea and the room schema. We're working on that and telling the company. Last time they came down, because they were so thrilled to get to do this stuff for us for the first time. They were like, oh, they sent their man down from Colorado or wherever he was. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. And they're excited they get to do the next piece. But because the community cares, see, y'all have to get this stuff. When our community starts caring about things, things get better. Amen? Community, somebody say amen out there, please. Because you know it's true. When you care about things, things happen. They do. When you care, they happen. If you don't care, then don't be complaining. Now, let me get my church announcement in. I got this one delivered. The Pink Sunday is coming, the 13th, the weekend of the 13th, 14th. There's going to be Saturday, the 13th, is Mammogram Saturday. And there will be free mammograms and health screenings and a health symposium that will be held here on the campus in front of the chapel. That is a big affair. That's the Worship in Pink weekend here on the campus. And Reverend Pamela G. Keller is responsible for this event, as well as Davisha Moore. So if you know either one of these blessed ladies, they're working on this lovely event, October 13th and 14th. The annual Pink Sunday Citywide Worship Service is going to be at, there'll be one at Fairfield Missionary Baptist Church as well. So there's a lot, that pink weekend, I know everybody's getting their pink pressed and ready for the big Pink Sunday events. And then on Sunday, October 14th, is from 4 to 6, Sharon Patterson, Reverend Sharon Patterson, Senior Pastor of Hamilton Park United Methodist Church in Dallas, is going to be speaker from 4 to 6, and I believe that's going to be, I think that's here, I don't know, that part doesn't say. But anyway, information to go online is at Coleman Center, Coleman Central, Tennessee.org, like the Coleman Cancer Center. Now, when Rev comes, Reverend Jones is supposed to be here at the weekend for the fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So I'll get him to elaborate on, because one of these things is like it's at his church.
Okay.
Yeah, they're having it at the Fairfield Missionary Baptist Church. So we'll get the scoop from him on that, and then we'll see Reverend Keller and get the scoop on that as well. So all the folks in pink can support the Pink Sunday worship weekend. I know a lot of churches have survivors of cancer.
That's correct.
Breast cancer, etc. So, and the women really like to come out for that. Now, this morning in the headlines, we have quite a bit here to cover and talk about. Let me start with, before I go further, into the collapse of the Tennessee State football player yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
And TSU officials say linebacker Christian Abercrombie is in critical condition after a head injury that caused him to collapse on the sideline of the Tigers game against Vanderbilt. The university issued a statement last night saying Abercrombie is being observed at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. The sophomore, who transferred to TSU from Illinois, collapsed on the sideline late in the first half of a 31-27 loss to Vanderbilt. He was given oxygen and put on a stretcher before being taken to the hospital for emergency surgery for a head injury. Tigers coach Rod Reed told the Tennessean after yesterday's game that he was leaving the stadium to head to Vanderbilt Medical Center to check on the linebacker. Reed was not sure exactly how or when the Atlanta native was hurt before coming to the sideline late in that second quarter. Reed said he came to the sideline and just kind of collapsed there. After the game ended, players from both teams joined Reed and Vanderbilt coach Derek Mason for a prayer. TSU has also asked reporters not to reach out to Reed or athletic director Teresa Lawrence Phillips while university officials worked to get an update on Abercrombie. So we want to keep this young man in the prayers and the TSU family in our prayers. Yeah. And, you know, it's had to be horrible for everybody to watch him collapse like that and then not know, and then head injury, and now he's in the hospital. So we just lift him up in prayer and the TSU family, because you know, they're all probably at the hospital waiting on news and to see what has happened to this precious young man from Georgia. Now, let's see what else we have going on here in this region. Out of Murfreesboro, a kindergarten teacher is one of six people accused of attempting to smuggle drugs into a Tennessee prison. The Daily News Journal reports that 50-year-old Shelly Gerda is among those arrested for conspiracy to introduce Suboxone into the Rutherford County Jail. Suboxone is a drug used to treat people addicted to opioids. Authorities say Gerda and two others attempted to deliver the drugs to her son and two other inmates at the jail. Gerda's son, Thomas Gerda Jr., was also charged. Gerda has taught at Stewartsboro Elementary School in Smyrna since August 1st of 2016. Ooh, that's a kindergarten teacher. Ooh.
Wow.
Rutherford County School spokesman James Evans said the district has suspended Gerda without pay. It is unclear whether the suspects have attorneys who could comment on the charges. Ooh, that's so bad, you know, teacher.
I know.
What would make somebody do something like that, you know?
Love.
Money.
That too.
It had to be.
Yeah.
Love or what?
Both, you know, probably in love with some whoever it was that's sitting there, and plus the
money. Oh, they said to bring it on, baby.
Yeah.
But what's love got to do with it? May I conjure up Ike and Tina? Yeah. I mean, really?
She'll be in there with them now.
Well, you know, I'm glad in my day I've never been that weak. Okay. I was just like, that might explain why I don't have a husband now. Because I'm like, nah. Nah. I mean, that just is, if that's it. Because I that happened to somebody that I knew years ago. Because, you know, I'm from a prison area.
Yeah,
there's a lot of prisons where I'm from.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I heard she did that, I was like, girl, what? Never, so and ever. And I think I was in my early 20s. And nice, quiet young lady. Nice and quiet. I was so surprised, so surprised. Anyway, that's love. Love will make you do crazy stuff. Well, hopefully y'all won't be doing anything crazy out there. I'm hoping that, come on, Lord, help them. Anyway, today we are looking for a warming trend here today. About 86, starting to feel like late summer. Tomorrow, 83. Back to work. Chances for rain, 40%. 50% on Tuesday. But it looks like we're in the mid-80s, so you can't turn those air conditioners off just yet. And by Wednesday and Thursday, it's going to get even warmer than that. 87. So currently, we have sunshine in the city and 60 degrees. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance. And being brought to you by Integrity Dental Care, located at 397 Wallace Road, Southern Hills Medical Center, Building C, Suite 314. Regular dental visits are essential to make sure oral health problems, from tooth decay to oral cancer, are detected and treated in a timely manner. At Integrity Dental Care, your oral health is our paramount concern, and we want to make sure your teeth stay healthy, function well, and look great. From regular cleanings and exams to advanced restorative treatments, all of your routine dental needs can be met right here at Integrity Dental Care. For more information, call 615-445-8700 or online at integritydentalcares.com.
This is the last weekend of September, and on Blue Simon City this weekend, we're going to celebrate two birthdays, ZZ Hill and Albert Collins. ZZ will have some down-home blues, and Albert will be featured on Top of It All 5-Minute Blues Concert Live.
And I would write songs.
That's Larry Garner, and he will have the Fast Track Blues Soundbite this weekend. Join me, Rosina Bailey, for Blue Simon City this weekend, right here. Catch Blues Time in the City Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Jazzy 88.
Support for Jazzy 88 WFSK comes from Penn Station East Coast Subs with four locations in Middle Tennessee, Hermitage, Mount Juliet, Bellevue, and Murfreesboro. Penn Station East Coast Subs, home to freshly made cheesesteaks, chicken teriyakis, grilled Italians, chicken parmesans, and more, made right when you order in full customer view. Hand-cut fresh french fries and hand-squeezed lemonade. For more information about Penn Station East Coast Subs, visit penn-station.com. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And if you have been listening at all to this show for any span of time, you'll know that over the months, I have had a series of discussions and conversations about police shootings in the city and issues of concern in that area. And there was news on Thursday that was shocking to everybody in the community that was paying attention, and that is that following the shooting of Daniel Hambrick, the police officer, Andrew Delk, was arrested and charged with homicide. And that sent shockwaves, I'm sure, around the community. There have been several press conferences and activists gathering and et cetera, et cetera. There was a recent press conference on Friday, and Attorney Joy Kimbrough is with us. She is attorney for the Hamburg family. And Joy is going to spend a few moments with us to talk about that press conference and, of course, the arrest and booked into jail of Officer Delkey. Joy, good morning, and thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
And I'm just delighted to get to circle back around with you and under this shocking circumstance, because I remember having you all in the studio, including Mrs. Hamburg, and that was one of the things that everyone unanimously wanted, was this Officer Delkey to be arrested. So how did this come about? Give us the update on how all of that went down.
Well, he was arrested Thursday morning. He was arrested. Well, he was actually allowed, I believe, to turn himself in.
Okay.
So initially, he was arrested and brought before the magistrate. Mm-hmm. Now, the magistrates work under the General Sessions judges. They serve at the pleasure of the General Sessions judges.
Okay.
And I think their contracts are renewed yearly.
Mm-hmm.
So he was taken before the magistrate with one of the TBI agents, and the magistrate decided that there was no probable cause.
Mm.
So he would not sign an arrest warrant, so Officer Delkey was free to leave. And then sometime after that, the information was presented to Judge Mondelli,
mm-hmm.
who is a sitting judge,
mm-hmm.
elected by the people.
Mm-hmm.
So Judge Mondelli found that there was probable cause.
Mm-hmm.
And he was arrested. His bond was set at $25,000, and he immediately made bond.
Well, that seems rather low.
Well, it is low for a criminal homicide. It's extremely low. A lot of times on criminal homicides, no bond is set. And if a bond is set, it is rare, almost unheard of,
mm-hmm.
if it's set less than $100,000.
Mm.
Wow. Yes. But also now, and I think Channel 2 reported this maybe yesterday,
mm-hmm.
We got additional information. It appeared that the TBI agent that was investigating the case
mm-hmm.
did not want to be the one to go before the judge or the magistrate to ask for an arrest warrant.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he works too closely with Metro Police
mm-hmm.
and would be uncomfortable for him to do that. So actually, his boss had to be the one to go present it to the magistrate. And my understanding is he did that kind of half-heartedly. He didn't want to do it either. So
is that
appears,
now, Joy, let me ask you, is that really part of what a lot of the problems are in Nashville? Is that everybody is don't want to hurt each other's feelings because they're friends or they're coworkers and they don't want to stand up for justice? They just don't want to get nobody mad at them. Is that what the problems are here?
A long time ago, and I think I may have even said this when Jackie Clemens was killed, that I had my concerns about TBI, I know it may have been a little bit better than Metro Police doing their own investigation,
mm-hmm.
but I said back then that they work together, they eat together. You know, it's like a brotherly relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
mm-hmm.
serve warrants together. They do all of that. So you're actually able to see this time. He didn't even want to have this officer arrested
mm.
because of their working relationship.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't feel comfortable doing it.
Mm.
So, you know, that's unfortunate.
Well, that to me takes away from what your job is and what you're paid to do, that you would, you know, and I guess we could probably think like that about the court system as well. The whole, you know, everybody's buddies, and, you know, I just don't see us ever getting any justice if that's the case. I mean, you know.
Well, this kind of justifies what people say. A lot of people, when they feel like, oh, they're just all in it together, you know, that gives that some credibility. But I'm concerned, and the family is concerned, about once this actually goes through the criminal court process, what kind of witnesses will these TBI agents make if they don't even want the man arrested?
That's true.
Yeah, so we, you know, it's troubling.
Yeah. So at that, when and as an attorney, you know, I'm sure you probably experienced so many things, but does it warrant someone from outside of Tennessee looking at our cases because everybody's so thick and tight with each other that they can't see sunshine? You know, they can't see in between. If somebody's wrong, they can't find them guilty, or they can't find the truth?
Well, you know, that sounds kind of like several questions within one. Do you mean like at the actual trial level when there's a jury trial, will there be a change of venue? Is that what you mean?
Well, I mean, there's another body needs to, because TBI and Metro Police are buddies and too close that they can't find fault in even when a person is completely wrong. Let's say, for example, that is the case, and we have this situation like these police involved shootings, etc. The TBI is not going to stand. I don't trust, you know, you can't trust, you
right?
Know, and that's not very comforting, you know, for the community to have to have that. Well, you know, all y'all going to do is help each other anyway, because that reminds us of our history,
right. Right. You're right about that. Well, what is good and what, you know, I'm happy about, we're satisfied about it seems so far, is that the our district attorney, Glenn Funk, did not seem to be a part of that buddy system. He was more objective, you know, and he recognized what had happened, and he did what he could to correct it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's...
So, and it did take a bit of courage to do what he did, for him to take it upon himself to take it to the General Sessions judge, an actual sitting judge.
Okay. All right. Now, had he not done that, then the outcome for the arrest and booking into jail and et cetera would not have happened, correct?
No. Now, he did, you know, they did take him down there to be booked and everything, but right, as soon as the magistrate said, hey, well, I don't find probable cause, yes, Delphi goes home, and that's the end of that.
Wow.
Unless the district attorney's office decided to take other measures. There are several things they could have still done, but... he did act immediately, and I believe that was for the best. He acted immediately, and now he has been arrested, but like you noticed and recognized, there is a very low bond.
Yeah.
But he has been arrested, and he will have to appear in court. Now, he is just now in General Sessions Court. In General Sessions Court, he will have to have what's called a preliminary hearing. And that will be before a General Sessions judge. And it looks like he's scheduled to appear before Judge Diane Turner. But anyway, he will appear before her. There will be a preliminary hearing where the state will present, you know, at least part of its case, enough to show that there was probable cause to arrest him. If Judge Turner decides that there was probable cause to arrest Officer Dell, she binds it over to the grand jury. Then the grand jury, again, looks for probable cause. So, and their dealings are in secret. So the state will once again, and see, I'm concerned about that, about the TBI appearing, because they're not really wanting him to be arrested, you know. And so anyway, some witness on behalf of the state will appear before the grand jury. And if the grand jury finds probable cause, then, you know, that's a true bill, which means, you know, he's been indicted, and he will appear before one of our six criminal court judges. You can almost pretty much figure out which criminal court judge it would be, because it's based on arrest date. And so it'll go to one of those six. I haven't actually looked to see which one it would be going to. But then in front of that judge, he will either eventually plea or he will have a trial before a jury.
Okay. Now, this magistrate, it is Evan Harris, correct?
Right.
Okay. He said there wasn't enough evidence. Is he the only person that felt that way, or did other people in this process?
The magistrate, we call them night court commissioners, they're there 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Okay.
So at any time Metro Police or whatever police department wants someone arrested, they arrest them, and then they bring them before the magistrate. And the magistrate, there are many magistrates. But, you know, you have your part-time and then you have your full-time. So, but there's always someone there. And if they find there was probable cause, then, you know, they go through the booking process and it goes from there. Mm-hmm. But they still have to appear eventually before a General Sessions judge.
How often do they refuse to make a charge? Does that happen all the
time? Now, that is something they can do.
Okay.
But I cannot recall a time they've ever refused to sign an arrest. Refuse an arrest on a murder.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that.
Okay.
I've never seen that. Yeah. I mean, it's unheard of.
Okay.
Wow. It is unheard of on a murder.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now the family. How's Mrs. Hamburg doing?
She's doing, I guess, the best she can. She feels some relief that, you know, he's been arrested.
Yes.
That's been, you know, a long time coming for her. She's waited, you know, a little bit over 2 months for that.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing what's going on, not understanding. See, because to them, just like almost everyone else, they've seen the video.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what was going on. Like, why hasn't this man not been arrested, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But he's getting some type of special treatment, you know, the delay. Then he goes in. I never saw him in handcuffs. They never cuffed that man. He's in and out of jail, has one of the lowest bonds. So he's getting some, you know, top-notch treatment. But they were, so they're relieved that he's finally been arrested.
Right.
But, of course, they have concerns about the process, even the fact that the TBI agent did not want to make the arrest.
Yeah. That just sends a signal, you know.
Absolutely.
It really does. It verifies a lot of what people feel, and that should worry the city, because it's something they need to think about as they try to seek answers themselves, they say, the mayor's office, etc., says. And by the way, let me insert his statement in that was released on Thursday, shortly after the word came down. Mayor Bradley says, "In August, I spoke with Daniel Hamburg's mother to express my condolences for her loss. I assured her that we would show respect for the life of her son because his life mattered. At that time, Mrs. Hamburg asked for justice for Daniel. The district attorney's decision to file charges in this case is a necessary step toward that end. I don't control what happened in individual criminal cases, but I will continue to work toward creating a fair, open, and transparent criminal justice system. This does not mean that every time an officer is charged with a crime or accused of misconduct, the officer will be found guilty. Metro Nashville police officers put their lives on the line every day. It is an incredibly difficult job. I fully support our police. However, officers will be required to account for their actions when they have been accused of misconduct. Put simply, we must have laws that are fairly, equally, and transparently applied." That's the statement from Mayor David Briley on the arrest of Metro Police Officer Andrew Delk. Now, I'm having this discussion with the attorney for the family, Attorney Joy Kimbrough. And Joy, can you hold on just about a minute or so while we take this quick time out? And we want to get a few more questions from you and then let you get on to your Sunday, okay?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
Thank you so much. Now, you're listening to Attorney Joy Kimbrough give us the 411, I guess you could call it, on the press conference that the family held this Thursday, the 27th, that just passed, following the news of this. And we have tried desperately to stay up on the details of this because it's important for the citizens to hear our point of view. And that's precisely what we want to do. Let's take the time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
For the next jazz night in America, we're in the city of brotherly love for guitarist Nels Klein and Lovers.
I wanted to be kind of dark and perverse and this other side of the mood music record that was more realistic, twisted. Just, I wanted it to be sweet, and I also wanted it to have dark wrinkles and dark corners.
And the premiere of some new tunes for the project by Philly composers. That's on the next Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m., and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is also being brought to you by Mount Zion Baptist Church. Join the Mount Zion Baptist Church weekly prayer call every Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. Central. Request prayer or listen to the playback of the call at theprayercall.org. For more information, please call the church office at 615-254-7296 or download the free Mount Zion Baptist Church app from your favorite app store. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Also brought to you by Integrity Dental Care and Mount Zion Baptist Church. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. Now, this morning I'm having a discussion with Attorney Joy Kimbrough, who represents the family of Daniel Hambrick and the young man that was shot July of this year. Matter of fact, it was right down the street. And he was running Metro Police Officer Delkey shot him in the back multiple times, and there have been a lot of discussion in the region about this, and this being the second police involved shooting of a black man, a young black man, in the last less than 2 years. And as many of you all know that are from the community, that these are not isolated incidents. This is a national issue that has come home to Nashville. So we're going to put more light on it because our community is not immune. Now, having said that, Joy, at the press conference, was there anything that we've not already discussed that the family would like to be known, or statement, comment that you can give us this morning?
There is nothing I can think of off the top of my head. They pretty much just wanted to go on and answer questions, because since the arrest of Daniel, I'm sorry, since the arrest of Officer Delkey, they've been bombarded with calls and requests for statements and interview. So they just went on. So anybody that wanted to ask their questions could ask their questions at that point.
Okay. And so for the most part, knowing that's the case, was there an area that they're all relieved that they got out? Was there anything in particular? Because I do know, I remember when Ms. Hambrick was on the air and she said she wanted an apology from among the things, you know, besides having her son back, but she wanted an apology from the chief. And when I had him on a couple weeks ago, he quasi did apologize, and the broadcast is on my podcast of, you know, he actually did, you know, he gave something that sounded very close to an apology. When I questioned him repeatedly about what Mrs. Hambrick had asked for, has the department in any way or form, shape or form, been in contact with the family at all since July?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay. And not heard anything from Chief?
Not a peep.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Would you anticipate, being so the officer was arrested, that somebody would say something? Would you have anticipated that, being the attorney, and you know how these issues are handled? Is that, should we be surprised, or is that just the way it goes?
What about
hearing
the
from the
police
department?
Chief?
Yeah, hearing from the department or the chief, period.
That may be, have been, you know, Ms. Hambrick is very emotional because, like, you know, that's her only child.
Yes.
That was executed. So she probably does feel like no one cares. And maybe it was her feeling that the police chief should at least apologize for what his officer had done. Mm. That is not mine, because, it's, you know, I'm a little bit more objective. Mm. And, well, I don't want to say objective. You know, that's not my son. That's her son.
Yes.
And that's what she wants. What I want for the police chief is a resignation. I wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't sway me one way or the other, a phone call, because even if he did, it would be something probably more forced and insincere.
Okay.
So what I would like for him is a resignation. What she wants probably is an apology, because, like I said, that's her son, yeah, and she loved him.
Right, of course, of course. How much throwing up in the family's face has there been of the things that, you know, Daniel's past and different things of that nature? How much of that have people been, you know, you hear a lot and see a lot?
Well, initially, you know, the police department or law enforcement, I don't know if it was TBI, maybe Metro Police, I don't know who it was, but law enforcement initially, like they always do, anytime there's a shooting, they immediately put the victim on trial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said, well, he was this and he was that and he was the other, as they always do. Now, since the video, we haven't heard as much, except some people. I guess some people would say, well, he was this, he was that, basically saying he deserved to die, you know. But once people see that video and see that Daniel is doing nothing but running, running, but, you know, and I say for his life, I say that figuratively speaking, but it's actually true, running for his life, and then he's executed like that. They're able to see, you know, Daniel is no threat to that man.
Mm-hmm.
He's running full speed ahead, and he's shot repeatedly, twice in the back, one in the back of the head. Mm-hmm. He even grabbed the back of his head before he falls.
Wow.
Hmm.
Wow. It was that second video, or the one from the view from the school, that really just laid it out. So, you know, when you see it, you're like horrified when you see how he looked like a scared, you know, deer or something. He literally was running for his life, for real.
Right. And I'll tell you this, initially, it's funny, and nobody's bringing that up. Initially, the TBI's initial statement, when it first happened, you know, they said that there had been a stop, and that Daniel had emerged from the vehicle holding a gun, and that's why the pursuit began, because he had that gun, and the officer had noticed it. Then in the September 16th hard copy of the Tennessean, I think it's on page 3A or so, they actually quote the chief as saying that Delkey said that Daniel had pointed a gun, you know, pulled the gun on him. And we find out now that none of that's true. Nobody's talking about the inconsistencies and the lies that Delkey told. His initial report, before he knew it was a video, he lied. He lied because he knew what he had done was wrong. He knew that was an execution. And now they're framing his version to fit the video. And they're saying, well, maybe he could have turned around and shot him. It's just insane. Yeah. It's insane.
Well, after viewing all the videos and all the angles and things that you have viewed as the attorney.
Right.
I was looking for a gun. I didn't see one. If he was running with something in his hand, I didn't see it. Have you seen it?
I have never seen the gun. Okay. I have not seen the gun. I know when he's running. Now, at one point, he falls. He falls, and you see something come out of his hand. And I believe they're saying that that was his cell phone. He gets back up. And he's running again, and I guess they're saying he's running with a gun. I never saw it, but I don't want people to get hung up on whether that was a gun or not. Okay. It doesn't matter.
Right.
He was running. He was far away. He was no threat to no one.
Right.
And he was shot repeatedly.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. The only threat that day was Officer Delkey. He's the one that killed a man, and then another bullet lodged in some building somewhere could have killed someone else.
Yeah.
He was the only threat that day, Delkey.
Now, we haven't heard much about him, Delkey. What do you know about him and his priors? Because he's only been, what, officer, a couple of years?
I know that, yeah, he was fairly new, inexperienced, and they put him out there. Usually when you're inexperienced, they want you to learn and all. You learn on the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
People. So, you know, he was over there. And I think there have been a couple of incidents with him before where he, I think one, maybe he had even drawn his gun. And the person didn't have a gun. He thought somebody had a gun. They didn't have a gun or something. There have been some incidents. I can't say exactly what they were. And I don't want to say anything incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there have been some instances in the past involving this officer.
Do you know, and then next I'll get what you have to say, do you know if he's had any type of, you know, sensitivity training or any kind of training, you know, to the bias training or anything about working with...
I don't know. I know that at one point Metro Police had that book, which I think they have now, since Jacquees Clemens' murder, I think they have, they no longer use that book at the training academy. But at one time they had a book which encouraged racial profiling and treating certain segments of society a little bit different than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason I say it's time for that chief to go. But they did have that. I don't know what type of training he received. I do not know.
Yeah.
But I know he was inexperienced,
yeah,
and they put him out there with more vulnerable members of society.
Yeah. Okay, X, I know you went to the press
conference. Yes, Attorney Kimbrough, this is X. You did an outstanding job at the press conference the other day. I was in attendance, and...
thank you, and we appreciate your questions
at
the press conference.
You're welcome. My question for you is, I know that Yeah, you've been on top of this since day one. How are you receiving help, or how can you receive support to keep up legally in terms of maybe the fees that are incurred with trying to make sure that justice is served, and maybe staffing and things of that issue?
Right.
How can you be helped?
Well, right now there is no GoFundMe or anything like that that are, you know, covering. I pretty much so far, you know, she had to file something in probate now, and my office just incurred those fees. You know, we took care of that. But there is no, like, GoFundMe or anything for any type of legal fees. We have received support, though, you know, people saying we're here for you, we'll do what we can. And I don't like to name everybody, but there have been groups, there have been organizations, and we appreciate everybody, you know, voicing their concern and their support. Our public defender's office released a statement, you know, very supportive. Black Lives Matter, Gideon's Army, just so many groups, some fraternities, sororities, just so many people.
Well, that's good to hear. It certainly is.
Yes.
Because you are, you know, the family, the issues and the costs rack up. You know, and this is going to be probably a lengthy process. How long you think it'll be? You know, this you described the process, you know, with the review, the grand jury, et cetera, that if they do have one. This could be years down the road?
Yeah, well, normally criminal homicides do range somewhere between a year and 2 years. But because this one is, you know, sort of high profile, I don't know if things will speed up or not. I don't know. But normally dealing with a criminal homicide, you're looking at a year to 2 years. He probably won't even have his first preliminary hearing in General Sessions Court until next year. I know people keep referring to the date, you know, they're set now, October 30th, but that's a settlement date. And normally at the settlement date, you or your attorney appear, and you get another date for which there will actually be a hearing where witnesses testify. So probably nothing's going to happen on that October 30th date. He'll be given a new date either at the end of this year or next year just for the preliminary hearing. It's a process for it to even get to the grand jury and, you know, determine whether or not they're going to indict. You're looking at a minimum of mid to late 2019, and it may go on into 2020. If you know, the judge finds probable cause, if the grand jury indicts them, you know.
So does the officer stay an officer, or is he placed
on leave?
Well,
they say he's decommissioned. Okay. I believe he still gets his paycheck. It's just that he can't go out. You know, he won't be stopping anybody, or he's not supposed to. You know, he won't be doing police duties.
So he won't be on the street. He'll be in the office to do administrative work? Or behind the desk?
You know, I don't know where he is. I just know he doesn't have a badge and a gun. No Metro-issue badge and gun.
Okay.
I know he doesn't have that for now.
Okay. All right. Well,
and he's not supposed to, with a felony pending, he shouldn't have a gun at all. But like I said, this is, you know, so different thing. When you're talking about these high-profile cases and, you know, I just don't know, because I remember with the whole Megan Berry and her little boyfriend and all, I think he was able to keep his gun or something. So I don't know, but he shouldn't. Nobody else gets to keep their gun charged with a criminal homicide.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not. I mean, I would not, you know. You just don't know, but I mean, that's kind of scary, you know.
Listen, I've been so shocked with this case. This is not the normal case, the average case. So, I don't know.
Do you think that's being handled with kid gloves because it involves who it does?
Hey, I think I don't know what's going on. I have never, ever seen a murder like that occur on video, and things go as they have gone. I have never, ever seen that. I always tell people, there are people who, like, for instance, there was this guy in a murder trial we just had. This guy only went to a game with some other people who had been accused. They charged a guy who just actually rolled with the person they thought pulled the trigger. They charged him with first-degree murder. What? So I don't understand them seeing this murder clearly on video where a man is shot in the back repeatedly. And, you know, he almost wasn't even arrested.
Wow.
You know, the magistrate that let him go, this is just, it's unheard of.
Yeah.
It's unheard of.
Well, this is
people do far less than charge of first-degree murder.
Well, you know, this is why people in the community, you know, or don't trust and don't want to, don't feel this, you know, the government of Nashville Metro and the law enforcement here, they can't feel it because they see that there is bias in it. And
right. When you have an investigating agent himself being reluctant and actually just saying, I don't want to do it, and did not do it. And he's an investigating agent, you know, hey, we're in for trouble.
Yeah, he's going to have to look at it for
sure. It's written all over the wall. You just have to read it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad at least we have someone as skilled at your job that, like you, to look out for the family, because I know that you will, and I've watched and heard from you, and I see that you know what you're doing, for real, and I'm grateful for that. I'm very, very grateful for it, and we will be staying in touch. And you know, Joy, anytime you need us here, you know, please do not hesitate to reach out to the station. I don't care when it is. Okay.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that so much. Yeah. And you all enjoy your Sunday.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You for all of the work that you do.
Okay, thank you so much. Take care.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That was Attorney Joy Kimbrough representing the Hamburg family, the family of Daniel Hamburg. And you want to go back and listen to my podcast, there's 8 hours of community discussion on there. And we have covered this quite a bit, from the family to the attorneys to the mayor to the police chief to the citizens groups to the preachers to the teachers to the NAACP to the average citizens, etc. So be sure to go on the SharonKays411.com website, and right there on top you'll see the podcast, and just click on that, and all the shows, about 55, 60 different shows up there. There's going to be hundreds when I'm done. But do check it out, and you will be able to hear some of the prior conversations.
I say close to 1,000.